all the urine. Yeah. And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Josh Kaplan, VesselNews.io. Let me tell you something. Bookmark that website. Vessel News. Bookmark that website, folks. You're going to be wanting to pay very close attention to that website. Very close attention. Do you have the update?
Okay. And before we get to Mr. Kaplan, I want to bring you a quick word from one of our sponsors, from Greenovative. Alan Riggs was just on our show
last week,
this Wednesday, another breakthrough announcement for their amazing saltwater powered battery charger. They figured out how to triple the output of the power pucks for the battery charger, and now each pair of power pucks will charge about 300 batteries instead of just over 100 batteries as the previous packs did. This is a tremendous improvement at a savings to you. The more power packs you buy, the more you can save. You may want to consider also the Super G-Mag complete units, and that they would arrive prior to hurricane season, as Alan Riggs points out, as we're right up against the beginning of the hurricane season and the end of the tornado season. But June 1st is the day that starts, and he points out that during the hurricane season and in times all across the country where we run into natural disasters, couple that with the political turmoil around the world, that this makes an excellent case for being prepared, and Greenovative products work as advertised, and they could very well save your life. Folks, go to greenovative.com, and again, check out the Super G-Mag complete units, as well as, if you've already bought those, the additional power pucks, where Mr. Riggs found out that they can do three times...
More power, Scotty.
The power.
More
exactly,
power,
three
Scotty.
Times the power. So again, go to greenovative.com and see if they have what you would need to help yourself out in an emergency. You will be glad you did it. That's greenovative.com.
VesselNews.io, Josh Kaplan. He's every morning I check his website out, and some people rely on Drudge. Vessel News, I can't say, I could just say that they are, Josh Kaplan is the guy. Hey, Matt, move over. Move over, buddy. Josh, man, it's good to have you. So
thanks for having me.
Yeah, although we did, Joe and I talked about the don't tell anyone. We talked about the Washington Post the story about the Russian hacks, only because I can't wait till tomorrow morning. I want to see Mika Brzezinski. I want to see her face melt.
Oh yeah, these people are going to.
I do.
I mean, they're already having mental breakdowns and panic attacks, and they believe this is the that this is the beginning and end all of impeachment evidence and all that's needed.
Josh, on the other hand, North Korea behind the ransomware attack?
Possibly.
Let's start there.
Right. So those that are visiting VesselNews.io could see that our lead right now is the case that's coming out right now from Reuters that two security agencies are now creating a link between North Korea and the ransomware hackers. To me, that's the biggest story because of the wide-ranging implications. Simply put, there's been much rattle-sabering between both North Korea and the United States, and many believe that we're headed towards war, and this could set off a world war, World War III. So I think the implications of North Korea being involved in an international hacking scheme could be means for the West to galvanize support to launch an attack on them, not only unilaterally from the United States' standpoint, but perhaps bring in other nations as well, a coalition, as we've seen in previous foreign wars. And what I'll say is this, is not to defend North Korea in any way, but rather put this out for people to consider. But we know, as per WikiLeaks, that the CIA has a program called Umbridge, which is a unit within the CIA that has compiled, managed, and dispersed malware from both Russia, China, and including Iran, and then placing it back on their own systems. And this has been known to use as a tool to frame the axes of evil. So do we see actually a CIA ploy to frame North Korea in this instance as a preamble for war? I throw it out there for the audience to make up their own conclusions.
You know, I saw a few separate news reports. One, what you posted on Vessel News about, is North Korea behind it? I've also seen somebody speculate that ISIS was behind it, and we've seen Putin, he's blaming the United States. But this was let's talk about this attack. This was they're calling it a global hack, and they're saying that this is, you know, one of the broadest attacks that we've ever seen in the history of the of
this
the
just has a feel to me of intelligence agencies. That's just me.
Yeah, and let's look at the targets. We see a lot of you know, in Europe and in Asia, you have financial institutions targeted, and in the hospitals and the medical records is one thing that really caught my attention. Is there anything about the attacks and the targets that tells us one way or another who it might be?
Well, I mean, we do know, of course, that these tools were taken from the NSA by a group known as the Shadow Brokers, and was dispersed to potentially a North Korean-linked group or a group that we have not yet been made aware of. One of the interesting caveats to this whole situation is that ransomware, of course, is a piece of tool that will enable an individual to obtain a ransom from somebody in the form of payment. Could be hard cash, Bitcoin, or any other currency. But people are not necessarily hearing how much actually has been ransomed from this whole scheme. It's anywhere between, this morning it was $40,000, $42,000 to be exact, had been obtained by the ransomware hackers, and then now this evening it's up to $70,000. So for a tool that infected over 200,000 computers, today was infecting every hour an additional 3,600 computers in over 200 countries, for them to accrue $70,000 tells you that this was not the main objective of these individuals, and rather this was some sort of test. And who was the culprit behind this test, we do not know as of yet for sure, but this could be again a preamble for something larger, whether it be war with North Korea or Russia or another foreign power of the United States, because the United States put out a statement today stating that they were not in any way impacted by this tool, which I think tells you potentially that there might be somebody on our side who is putting forth this tool against our enemies.
You know, one of the, I don't know, I didn't read the article that's on the top of VesselNews.io that asks if North Korea is behind it, but one of the reasons that they say it might be is because apparently some of the software used had some codes that are used apparently in North Korea or by North Korea. Is there anything else beyond that we know of yet?
That is the only piece of information that we have right now. It is still very early.
Okay. And, you know, hopefully this is not a story that just you know, goes away with the news cycle. Hopefully we do get some answers on
that. I doubt that.
Well, you know,
but it's actually very interesting, the timing now of this Washington Post story that's coming out. I think the biggest story would be to attach the North Koreans to this international hacking situation. And yet this Washington Post story, within about an hour and a half of there being reports trickling out from Reuters, does this quote unquote bombshell hit the media landscape. So I find the timing of this to be rather peculiar as well.
Yeah, I agree.
And we see the North Korea had another missile test over this last weekend. I believe it was their sixth in the most recent string. And Russia came out and told the U.S. to stop provoking.
Yeah, what do you make of that? I mean,
well, Russia shares a border with North Korea.
Right.
North Korea and Russia have ties. Putin has met Kim Jong on, excuse me, Il. Numerous times, Kim Jong-il never flew in an airplane. He took a train to visit Putin in Moscow. So when I was in North Korea myself, there were a number of murals of Kim Jong-il and Vladimir Putin in the mausoleum in which Kim Jong-il and his father, Kim Il-sung's bare bodies are being preserved. So again, they share a border. They have as deep ties as you could have with North Korea, aside from China. And I think any more intervention of the United States is bad news. As we've seen historically, the United States establishes permanent or long-term military apparatus and bases in the countries in which they go to war with subsequently. Look at Germany, look at Iraq. And then, of course, there's over 130 bases throughout the world in the United States. So does Russia want to have American troops on their border? There are already tens of thousands of troops on the South Korean border. I don't think that they want any more if you are Vladimir Putin.
Okay. Hmm. So, again, you know, we get more of the talk and the hype of war with the media, never really truly painting the truthful picture between, you know, North Korea and the U.S. And again, last hour we talked with Mr. Sangari and Colonel Emmanuel about the different leverage aspects that not only Trump but China have against North Korea and how to get more of a diplomatic solution to this rather than, you know, a solution of conflict by conflict.
Well, you know, Josh, or our guest is Josh Kaplan, vesselnews.io. The geopolitical landscape, where are your eyes? Because you're on the news all the time. I mean, folks, Josh is like surveilling the news from the deepest, darkest places on the internet and elsewhere. But where are your eyes kind of affixed when it comes to Syria, North Korea, and other hotspots? Is it North Korea, or is it Syria, or is it both, or is there a symbiotic news or relationship in terms of news between the two theaters, so to speak?
Well, the common answer, the run-of-the-mill answer, of course, I'm watching all of the hot issue areas, like what's going on between the United States and North Korea, and of course now this report by the State Department accusing the Assad regime of operating a crematorium, burning bodies, hanging bodies, and running more or less a killing factory out of the country. And if you read the Associated Press report, it was choppy at best, their accusation. They said there were reports of they think that there may be. This wasn't even a definitive report, and yet the headline was editorialized as if this was concrete fact. Now, I'll take the listeners in a different direction, and I'll name two countries or two parties that I think are headed for war that I'm posting on vesselnews.io that I don't see the mainstream media focusing on. The battle between Israel and Hezbollah. We are going to see, in my opinion, tempers flaring greatly within the next year or so that could lead to yet another war. I've been posting on this on vesselnews.io for the past couple months. Hassan Nasrallah, who is the leader of Hezbollah out of Lebanon, has been fiercely attacking Israel with both verbal threats and a buildup along the Golan Heights that we haven't seen in the past few years. Now, there was a report that we curated on vesselnews.io that stated via Adam Credo of the Washington Free Beacon that hundreds of millions of dollars, roughly $400 million in cash, part of the larger sum cash payment that Obama made to Iran, $400 million of that has been given to Hassan Nasrallah of Hezbollah. So we see a Hezbollah that is extremely well off financially now with this large cash injection. We see that they are stockpiling missiles to levels that far exceed during the Israeli Hezbollah war a few years ago. And we also see again a troop buildup on the Golan Heights. So for me, I take a look at all of these hot button issue areas that the mainstream media is focused on, and I say, well, we already know about North Korea and Syria, but what are we really not talking about now? And the other thing, and it's not necessarily a war, but could lead to war in other areas, and especially between Lebanon and Hezbollah and Israel, is the radical factions within the Iranian political elite are now making their way to the upper echelons in the polls. We might see a radical hard right conservative Iranian become president, and of course we understand the implications of that. If we thought that Ahmadinejad was far right and very conservative and anti-Israel, wait until who you see some of these candidates in Iran running and could potentially assume the presidency there. And this, of course, has implications that are very serious in the region. And that's why we're hearing reports that Trump is now finalizing a $100 billion arms agreement with Saudi Arabia, because Saudi Arabia is deeply concerned with a even more extreme Iran. So that's what I'm looking at, both Hezbollah and Israel and the Iranian elections.
Okay. Josh, did you see anything in the news about the Palestinian president stating his openness to reach a peace agreement?
Sure, yeah. So we had that story on VesselNews.io. We had it from the Jerusalem Post. It was an unnamed source, and Mahmoud Abbas did, subsequent to meeting with President Trump, state that he was that he voiced his strong willingness to sign a peace agreement between the Palestinians and the State of Israel, and that this was an unprecedented step. Considering, of course, that a peace agreement between the two countries would be historic, but also because relations between the two have been quite poor over the past few years, especially now with this Palestinian hunger strike issue. Now we see throughout Israeli jails, Palestinians engaging in hunger strikes. So there seems to be a lot of resistance from the grassroots activists on the Palestinian side towards making any sort of peace with the other side. So I have been watching that. It's going to be interesting to see what comes about in that instance. But the main issue is this, is that the Palestinians are not solely represented by Mahmoud Abbas of the PLO. He also has to realize that Hamas, a terrorist organization which has the only stronghold over Gaza, is a large subset of the Palestinian people. And he cannot only make a decision based on what he wants from the PLO standpoint for the entire Palestinian population, for that very reason that I just stated. So we might have Mahmoud Abbas sign an agreement, but will Hamas and the rest of the Palestinians agree?
Okay, I just want to say this. I don't know what to do with this bit of information, Josh. I got, this is about, not quite a month ago, but getting close. Someone from one of our intelligence agencies I was having a conversation with, and it was kind of almost a slip of a tongue, when I was asking about what he was doing. Anyway, the long and short of it was that he was, I won't say exactly what he said, but making preparations for hostilities by Hezbollah. You know, so what do you make of that? Now, let's assume that that's correct. And that's valid. That's legitimate, authenticated information. That kind of fits into what you're saying, I take it?
Well, absolutely. And I think, you know, with a President Trump, we're going to see a United States that stands tall with Israel as we have not seen in the past 8 years or so. So it wouldn't surprise me if I understand the tidbit of information that you had obtained, that the United States is planning a military strategy in regards to supporting Israel in a future war against Hezbollah. That's something that is a very real scenario, and it will be very interesting to see how that plays out, considering the fact that despite numerous attempts from the international community to install either a UN-backed force or a United States-backed force in Israel to keep peace between the Palestinians and the Israelis, it'll be interesting to see what a role post-war will be for the Americans if there is actual war between Israel and the United States against Hezbollah.
Josh, I hate to do this during the interview. We're getting a beeping noise every so often coming from you. My dad thinks you might be leaning on the keyboard or something.
Either that or your pacing going off.
I don't hear anything. I'm going to unplug my I'm going to unplug my headphones, and you let me know if that works.
Okay. Well, we've never heard that noise here before, so we don't know. But it's coming through the sound somehow, so.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, to get back on track here, we're talking about Palestine and Abbas and Hezbollah. Any comments on the upcoming foreign policy trip that Trump has, or the trip Trump has to Italy, Jerusalem, and Saudi Arabia? And do you believe that we could see, do you believe that, that Trump has a goal of trying to help, be the one to bring about this peace deal? There's the noise. I don't know if you heard that, but.
No, I haven't. I have not.
So he's playing, Nintendo.
Yeah, my apologies. I'll have to look, into that. Well, I mean, just to take a look at what's going on, between Trump and the Pope. The Pope, as we know, is of a leftist political persuasion. He seems to be more of an evangelical, for climate change, and for gay rights than he is for his own, religion. So I think Trump is being presidential in trying to sit down with him and cultivate some type of relationship, because he has been the Pope adversarial, towards Trump's policies, and including his personality as well. So I think Trump is going to try to charm him in some regard, but I think to little avail. The Pope, once this meeting is concluded, is still going to continue with the rhetoric that we've been hearing from him for the past few months since the campaign. So again, I think this is a photo op for the president, as a demonstration of respect, but I don't think anything substantial will come of this. Of course, the meeting in Saudi Arabia is a message to Iran that the United States stands side by side with Saudi Arabia, coinciding potentially with a $100 billion arms deal. In addition to that, there are also reports that Saudi Arabia is finalizing a $40 billion investment in American infrastructure, which will create a number of jobs. Now, my readers are concerned about this. This was our lead story a few nights ago, because infrastructure is obviously critical from a security, national security standpoint. And for the Saudis to be investing billions of dollars, well, they have a certain amount of skin in the game, and thus will come certain technical information flowing back to them. And what happens if that gets into the wrong hands that we've seen previously with Saudi Arabia and the Arab world? So I think that's going to be a very interesting, important meeting. And of course, Israel, I think, will be more of a, not a lighter meeting, but more of a friendly meeting between past friends, President Trump and Netanyahu. They'll obviously discuss the threats that I went over moments ago. And I think the issue that people didn't expect to come up was this moving of the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Although we posted a story on Vessel about this, I think this is an issue that is overblown and likely won't actually materialize. I don't believe that in a larger peace agreement, the embassy will be moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, but look out for reports about tension between these two parties about this particular issue. And I think it might be overblown and really a caveat to the larger peace agreement that I think Trump is going to try to push when he's in Israel.
Now, being, the author of Art of the Deal, talking about his success as a businessman and his ability to negotiate, I'm sure we've talked about this before, but do you see Trump as, the perfect candidate to try to establish this peace agreement?
Well, I don't. I think that Trump has the right people in place to put forth a deal that is innovative, that is different, and thinks outside the box. He has the best thinkers in the world right now on the case, whether it be Rex Tillerson, who not only has incredible business acumen, but when he was the CEO of ExxonMobil, under him ran and operated a miniature State Department. As we know, ExxonMobil operates in over 36 countries and has anywhere between, I think, 15 to 20,000 employees worldwide. Of course, you have General Mattis. You have somebody like Jared Kushner. who, despite his liberal leanings, is actually quite conservative when it comes to Israel as an Orthodox Jew. Israel is quite close to his heart, and I think that he's going to push innovative solutions as he has in trying to make the government more efficient. I'm not a big fan of his policies in general, but I think in trying to streamline some of the bloated bureaucracy in the United States, I think he's going to try to apply these same principles to this deal. And there could be a likelihood that a deal is made. Whether or not, you know, this is one of the great deals of our time that Trump is going to be able to fulfill, we don't know. But I think in terms of the chemistry, the mood, the optimism that Trump has brought to the international community in dealing more directly in terms of terror, in terms of war, and then just his general dealings with world leaders. I think they enjoy the candidness. I think they enjoy the fact that Trump thinks outside the box and is not worried about spending political capital to get things done abroad. We might see a peace deal. The probability of that, numerically speaking, I can't put a finger on it. But I would say it's probably more likely under than Trump than it would be under Obama, if you had asked me 8 years ago, knowing that Obama was going to be president and then Trump.
Yeah, very, very well said. And folks, we're talking with Josh Kaplan. His website is vesselnews.io. That's vesselnews.io. It's a website that grabs a number of important stories daily. This is what Josh does every day, all day, is to grab stories and throw them up here that are relevant to the political discussion and world events that are going on. And his numbers continue to grow very massively. So make sure you bookmark his site. Again, vesselnews.io. We're going to be talking with Josh in through this next segment, taking us to the end of the show. So don't go anywhere. You're listening to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
There shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. I mean, it is... It'll blow you away. Absolutely, Eric.
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
Hi, I'm Grace Gonzalez from Caring Close in the Woods. We are an American family-owned company founded and built on skills and knowledge gained from responding to 18 major disasters in the U.S. and around the world. We found that most people don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone any medicinals to save their life. We're offering 25% off our must-have American Heritage Army's kit. It contains 12 homeopathic remedies, a booklet that goes over everything in your kit, and our brand new book, Major Disasters, Lessons Learned. Just enter coupon code HAGMAN. In life or a disaster, you must be able to take care of yourself. You may not be a medical doctor, and your grandmother and your great-grandmother probably weren't either, but they still knew how to minister to their family's health issues, and so can you. Check out our American Heritage Army's kit at www.changewiththewoods.com. Your life may depend on it.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. that means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
Vesselnews.io. We're going to get back to Josh in just a second. I got a few shout-outs that John handed me from people in our chat. Want to say hi to Bob in Argentina. Want to say hi to John in England. Tom in Canada. Gabrielle from the U.S. Coast Guard. And then we have two Vietnam vets, MJO and Donald. Thank you for your service. And welcome, everybody. Again, Josh Kaplan is our guest. Vesselnews.io is the website. Make sure you bookmark the website and check it daily. It's a great resource for everything that's going on in the world, politics to economy, wars and rumors of wars. And we're going to jump right back into it with Mr. Kaplan. Hillary Clinton, she has launched a new organization, a political organization. As she says, she's, you know, part of the resistance again. And she launched this new organization entitled Onward Together. From my understanding, it's a 501c4 organization, and she's already got the donate button up. And she issued a number of tweets, you know, saying, you know, this year hasn't been what I envisioned, but I know I'm still fighting for a kinder, big-hearted, inclusive America. Onward. She also tweeted, we're launching Onward Together to encourage people to get involved, organize, and even run for office. She just won't go away, Josh.
Well, I mean, she doesn't have much to do right now. We defeated her, and defeated her swiftly, despite the left's hysteria that the Russians interfered in the American elections. This is somebody who, just akin to her Clinton Foundation, is attempting to accrue power within a party in which she, alongside Barack Obama, helped age and then destroy. Under Barack Obama's presidency, there were over 1,000 seats within all levels of government, whether it be mayoral, whether it be counselor, whether it be Senate, whether it be Congress, that were lost to Republicans. And this is also at the hands of Hillary Clinton. So this is somebody who not only has been instrumental in destroying the very party that she now thinks she is going to prop up with new prospects, but I think that she has to be very careful as to how she navigates the waters. I do know that I'm relatively plugged in as to what the internet is saying about this new venture, and whether it be on Twitter or Reddit or anywhere else, members of her base are not impressed with this new initiative. It has the same language, the same tired language and logos and colors and phraseology that we've heard in the past, that's disconnected from the actual person that's supposedly running this organization. And the one thing that I'll say on this right now is, we've covered it on Vessel sparsely, but now because there's more primaries, it's going to be more of a focus. But just as we've seen, there's a variation right now in the Democratic Party that's taking place that we've seen in the Republicans a few years ago with the Tea Party. So we've got somebody like the Young Turks, which is a fairly sizable progressive outpost on the internet, on YouTube, that is now pressing and pushing a progressive spring, which is a subset of Democrats that are justice minded, that are going to be primarying a lot of the candidates in the mold of Hillary Clinton. So Hillary has to be careful what candidates she makes capital investments in. Are they going to be establishmentarians, as John Ossoff is in Georgia, or are they going to be more of the Bernie Sanders progressive ilk? Because if she isn't putting her money on the right horse, she's going to once again render herself useless within her own party. So that's really what I'm taking a look at, as to which candidates are getting the funds, because the progressive spring is real. Senator Manchin of West Virginia will be primaried, in my opinion. Senator McCaskill in Missouri will be primaried, and we even see a primary challenger for Nancy Pelosi out of San Francisco. So depending on who Hillary backs will be, I think, predicated on the level of success that this new organization has.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, just to see her sit there and already open up the, you know, the coffers for donations, I would be very surprised if she put any money towards any other person aside from herself. I mean, we know the, we talked about this in the first hour, the selling access, that she did while she was Secretary of State, the favors to her Clinton Foundation, the money that was put in there for the favors that she turned around and gave for that money, the Haiti earthquake relief fund that disappeared in the billions of dollars. I don't know anybody who would donate to Hillary Clinton right now, but if you did, I would not expect a return of investment other than it going into her pocket. And hopefully, you know, she'll just, you know, become irrelevant and go away. But you know, as the time moves forward, that seems less and less likely. But you know, it's a big joke to people who've been paying attention what she's up to. And these people just get, you know, we see the political climate, the so-called resistance against Trump, both in the media and on the left. And, you know, those hardcore people on there are continuing to intensify this fight, and the mainstream media is backing them up, giving them cover, and creating really a chaotic political climate, that we see continuing to foment day by day that goes by. It continues to get worse. You mentioned that there's a challenger against Nancy Pelosi. I just saw that on your website. And Maxine Waters. Real quick before we move on, any thoughts on these, you know, politicians like John McCain, Nancy Waters, Lindsey Graham, Pelosi, Schumer, who do everything in their power to take the narrative, to score political points for themselves, you know, from making up stuff to calling for impeachment? Do you believe that the people will finally, as the political politics in this country are becoming more polarizing, do you believe more people will root out, from the left and right, people like Pelosi and Waters and McCain?
Well, I do think it is situational. Omar Navarro, who is a Republican, running in Maxine Waters' district, which encompasses Inglewood and some of the lesser well-off, economically speaking, areas within Los Angeles, is running there. I think he's going to have a very tough battle, despite overwhelming support, from, the GOP grassroots. Now, Nancy Pelosi, I don't know if we're going to have a similar scenario where David Bratt, who defeated, Eric Cantor out in Virginia, I don't know if we're going to see parallels, there. But I do think that somebody like a John McCain could lose his next senatorial run if he decides to do so. I think he'll be maybe 208 at that point. I don't know. He might be too old to run. We've lost track at how old John McCain is, but he's been around almost as long as he's been alive as he's been in the Senate. That's what it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think despite a strong conservative voice that primaried John McCain, I think that in the subsequent race, if he chooses to run, he might lose. And even before that, somebody like Jeff Flake, who is a hardcore rhino within the Republican Party, and an interesting caveat about Jeff Flake is Jeff Flake was the deciding vote for the decision of confirming the ninth district court judge in San Francisco, who struck down the travel ban. An interesting factoid there that, somebody on the conservative side, was the deciding voice. And of course, there was a domino effect in this regard. So I think it's situational. I think we could see McCain, defeated in the future. I'm not so sure about Maxine Waters. I'm not so sure about Nancy Pelosi, but I do think that Senator McCaskill in Missouri is certainly vulnerable, and definitely somebody like Manchin, I think, is vulnerable as well, especially flip-flopping on the Planned Parenthood issue recently, where he has been photographed within, I think, a 7 to 10 year period holding up a pro abortion sign and then an anti-abortion sign. So yeah, we're going to see these races play out, but I don't see large macro trends where incumbents lose. I think it's going to be spotted and situational.
While we're talking about the politics and a little bit about political left, any front runners you see emerging for 2020? And I only ask this because of I see the articles that come out from the left, and we see that there seems to be a power vacuum there, and there's nobody electable, as they're saying, and now they're just grasping at anybody who is even semi or remotely popular in the smallest way, and throwing their names at the top of the ring. Any front runners?
I got to jump in here and just say, after listening quietly like a church mouse over here, 2020, that's like a century away. But go ahead.
It is.
No, but it's such an interesting subject. The raw politique is, always conjures up interesting conversations. I mean, look, as you stated, politics, a year in politics or a day in politics, it's like, it's like human years to dog years, right? Mm-hmm. So it feels like light years away, 2020, but it really isn't. So, of course, the front runners that we hear are those like Elizabeth Warren and, of course, Cory Booker. And we're also hearing Kristen Gillibrand, who's the junior senator from New York. But my eye isn't really on any of those. Actually, my eye is on none other than Mark Zuckerberg, who has been traveling the country on a tour of some sort to meet everyday people. So he's going to places like Louisiana, and he's having ribs with people, and he's going to places like Ohio and having dinner with Trump supporters and just trying to pick their brain and see why they voted for him. We see him having his photographer snap pictures of him in an African-American church, singing hymns alongside them. And I think the last photo I saw of him this week was him milking a cow on a farm. I haven't seen anybody put this amount of work if they were to run for president.
Sure, that wasn't Rachel Maddow.
No, it
not,
might have
not
been.
Milking a cow. Never mind.
It might have been. He might have been giving a bottle to Rachel Maddow, but I haven't seen any political candidate putting as much effort into 2020 than Mark Zuckerberg. And the, I think, more interesting caveat to this all is a few months ago, he came out in an interview saying that he was no longer an atheist. As you know, to be an atheist is a highly unpopular thing if you're going to run for office, especially the presidency. So to hear somebody like Mark Zuckerberg, who is a staunch atheist, have an epiphany and all of a sudden be a believer, I think signals maybe more than anything that he's running for office if that quirky fact resonates.
Yeah, I saw the reason I asked that question is because last week there was a report that The Rock was considering running. Dwayne Johnson was considering running for president, and that kind of caught my attention. But other than that,
and
there's
Bruce Willis for VP. Right?
I think it's a possibility. I mean, look, there is nothing that The Rock has not been able to achieve in the past few years. Donald Trump has paved the way for out-of-the-box candidates to be successful. He has, in some regards, created his own model, his own pathway for non-conventional candidates. You're hearing things like Oprah Winfrey considering the presidency. You're hearing Howard Schultz, the now, I think, former CEO of Starbucks. He's now stepped down to run the premium side of the business. You're hearing the CEO of Disney, Bob Iger, who's in the news today because hackers apparently stole a brand new Disney film, asked for a large ransom, to which he said no. So there's a number of unconventional candidates that are considering the presidency. I don't see why The Rock couldn't run and have a very good chance. Look, at the end of the day, right now, we're in a media landscape, specifically driven by the Drudge Report, which, as Mike Allen of Politico once said, and it always stuck with me, if do you think Drudge is a conservative populist, his answer was, well, that's secondary. Primary is he is pro-chaos. That's an actual quote by Mike Allen of Axios and Politico. And so I think The Rock would create the perfect storm of chaos, alpha male against alpha male, Trump versus The Rock. If you think that the media won't push this race for clicks, especially with Facebook killing their reach, especially with Google Ads killing their revenue, you are mistaken. That race could absolutely happen.
And I agree. Wow. It would be that much closer than people believe.
But what Josh just said there, folks, and that's why I like VesselNews.io, and I like this man, this young man. He's very intelligent. Pro chaos. So how true that is, and Joe, we're seeing this ourselves, being in the quote alt right independent media. People will accuse us of exploiting this any chaos, fear porn. Well, you know, Josh. I mean, you know what it's like. Wow, that's an interesting observation about Drudge. And looking at,
and this was not my observation. This was Mike Allen of Politico when he was asked what his thoughts were on the way that Drudge had put his narrative together, and that always stuck with me. You know, because there was a headline not too long ago where he had Oprah considering running for president, and that was his main story. Now, if you're Drudge, who spent the past year pushing Donald Trump towards the White House, and then all of a sudden you pit him against potentially the only candidate that could really beat him, because the base is very thin on the Democrat side, you have to ask yourself, why is he doing this? Mm-hmm. From an ideological standpoint, how does that benefit the base? Unless you view things through the prism of the Drudge Report and a few other websites, but particularly his, is a pro-chaos website narrative-wise above all.
Okay. Interesting.
Josh, we got about...
I love it.
We have 10 minutes left in the interview. Before we move forward with anything, I want to ask you if you have anything that you want to talk about or touch on before we run out of time.
Yeah.
Sure. So to build on the Zuckerberg point, another interesting part of the puzzle here is that Facebook announced that imminently there are going to be major changes made to the newsfeed. Within Facebook HQ, there's talk that the newsfeed is noisy, spammy, clickbaity, and full of information that apparently is non-pertinent to the everyday individual. So what Facebook is going to do is it's going to prioritize and push content from corporate websites that have sleek overlays, very fast websites, original content, and then things that touch on the more conventional side of people's sensibilities. So they are less prone to clamp down on reach about the top 10 things about drinking water from BuzzFeed than they are about clamping down on a story in which I put out today about a Muslim migrant who beat up a Dutch local on crutches. So you're now going to see Facebook clamping down on independent small media companies, not only from a narrative standpoint, but simply because also their websites are just not as well built, and the presentation is not as sufficient as in Facebook's mind as some of the others. So what you're going to see is all these independents are going to have a really tough time on Facebook. Now, in addition to that, Facebook now is hiring directors to come out with their own movies and television shows. Because Zuckerberg has the platform, he has the pipeline, and he says to himself, well, I'd rather have VesselNews.io's websites permeating throughout my platform, or would I rather have my own? So all of this comes into play when you look at Zuck 2020. He's going to be pushing his own Facebook content down his pipeline. He's going to be suppressing the websites, the independent media on both the left and the right that might be adversarial towards a Zuckerberg presidency in favor of more corporate entities that would probably uphold his presidency. And you're going to see potentially new platforms manifest, hopefully in the near future, where places like myself and you could get serious traffic from, because Facebook more and more is just not cutting it.
Okay.
That's the truth. And Josh, in that same vein, have you seen an increase in censorship? And I know we talked about this last time you were on, but censorship manipulation of the search stats and such. Have you seen that hasn't abated, has it? Or has
so? So, daily now, depending on the story, and it's usually a story about someone of the Muslim faith engaging in nefarious, violent behavior that others might call hate speech, I would just call telling the truth. And whenever I post a story on Facebook, it will load for about maybe 10 seconds, which then I have gotten the signal that it probably won't load. And then it says there's something wrong with the URL. Please try again later. Now, if you go on my Twitter, my personal Twitter at Josh D. Kaplan, you'll see that I posted a screenshot of this thing happening today. And it's happened to me in the past week 4 or 5 times. So that's the way Facebook is personally clamping down on me and Vessel News.
And we've seen the continued censorship, not only on Facebook, but the shadow banning and other banning that Twitter does, the ad revenue that YouTube, taking away ad revenue from just about any and every conservative political commentator and conservative news site. And one thing that's real interesting that we've talked about with other people is that, say you took a 2-minute video report that CNN did that is on YouTube that is able to be monetized, and you copy it word for word, putting no bias other than what was already in the original report, word for word, and put it out on your channel or our channel, you would not be able to monetize it, because they'll say it's controversial and it's, whatever their excuse is. So we see this rampant, move, especially in the U.S. to silence, conservative voices and opinions other than the, mainstream liberal narrative. And in places like in Europe and in other countries around the world, they don't have to censor so much because they have hate speech laws and there's no freedom of speech over there. Do you see a time where conservative media is basically just going to have to pay to put their content out versus the other side where they'll be receiving the ad revenue and whatnot? Or do you see a time where it'll be even worse than that, where from the net neutrality that they're trying, that the current FCC chairman's rolling back, do you see a time where it will be removed, the conservative point of view will be removed from the internet?
Well, it's already happening on Facebook. I've got contacts that during the election amassed anywhere between 500 to 5 million Facebook likes on a number of different groups, some of them being as large as 2 million people. And Facebook is clamping down on their reach. And recently, two of their groups that had about 300 to 400,000 likes was seized from Facebook. Now, this group in particular was not grown organically, meaning there weren't everyday people that liked the page because somebody else was talking about it and they just simply liked it. No, they actually took out ads, and it cost them anywhere between 10 to 25 cents a like. So they were advertising using the Facebook platform. And then after spending thousands of dollars during the election, they've had a number of these pages seized. And the reason for this, of course, was posting controversial content. So we are already seeing that. Now, there was a report that didn't achieve, or I should say, reach the levels of mainstream media's attention, of course, but on Vessel News we had the story. In Austria, there was a landmark court ruling in which the courts of Austria stipulated that Facebook must remove hate speech if there is a report that goes through the courts stipulating to do so. So that means that if there are unpopular opinions permeating in Austria on Facebook to the dismay of a subset of users, they have full recourse and legal precedence to have it removed swiftly. And this might have international ramifications as hate speech becomes more of an issue on the internet and within political circles. We see Europe clamping down on hate speech as well. Germany threatening Facebook with hundreds of thousands of dollars if they don't remove hate speech posts. So it's a very dangerous game. Now, in terms of paying for posts to be promoted, I have another friend who is has a fairly large group of about 800,000 people, and he's saying his reach is so bad that he's now paying for his posts to be boosted on Facebook. And if the RPM, the money he's getting per thousand clicks, outweighs what he's paying to boost it, he'll take the difference and he'll make a little bit of money. But he wasn't doing that before. Mm-hmm. So we're already seeing conservatives investing in promoting their content on these liberal platforms, and this will only continue to get worse.
Yeah, you know, just to the paying on Facebook, I believe it was Mark Dice who did a video maybe about 3 months ago that showed how when you pay to boost your content, you're still only reaching the people who follow you for the most part. And then secondly, whether it's, you know, you spend $1,000 or whether you spend $10,000, the maximum people you can reach to boost that post is still, you know, under 5,000 people. And it's the same, you know, basically you could pay $100,000 and still only reach, if you do it all in one, transaction, still only reach a very limited number of people. And it seems that, you know, what's happening there is happening to a lot of people. You get 10,000 followers and then somehow, you know, you only get 500 of those that actually see your post when you post something, and the other, you know, 9,500 don't see it at all. And when you pay to boost your post, it's still reaching out to those 9,500 people that are already following you that don't see your post. It is a scheme.
You know what, Josh, we've seen this happen across all platforms too. The very platform you're on right now, I don't know, it says we have so many hundreds of several hundred people watching on YouTube Live. Backend tells a different story. Our servers tell a different, or the bandwidth tells a different story. I'm sorry, with respect to YouTube, the numbers tell a different story in the backend. And it's interesting because we could have 50,000 views. We'll say at 7 o'clock in the morning. You come back at noon, and it might be at 35,000. It's just strange how these numbers are manipulated. It's just it's crazy. But
there is very little transparency.
Yeah. Yeah. How about Canada, real quick? And by the way, folks, follow Josh Kaplan on Twitter, Josh D. Kaplan on Twitter, and make sure you bookmark vesselnews.io. How about Canada, real quick?
We got about a minute.
Yeah, in terms of hate speech.
Right. Well, look, the Parliament of Canada passed a motion. It's not law, as some in the United States have been promoting. It is a motion against the citizens of Canada. If they are to speak out in a hateful way against Islam, they could be censored. Now, if this becomes law, there could be charges against those engaging in quote-unquote Islamophobia if you just speak out about some of the negative aspects of the religion and how that religion then manifests in the real world. It is a scary situation, and again, all of these motions, whether it be in Canada or in Austria or abroad, could have deep international consequences.
All right. Very interesting. Josh, you've taken us to the end of our hour. I want to thank you so much for joining us. Vesselnews.io is the website. Again, vesselnews.io, and bookmark that site. And we look forward to having you back on the program.
Yeah, just about us. The only website, news website you'll need, really. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
All right. That'll do it for us tonight. We had a fantastic show. And we got a great week planned. The this week on Hagman and Hagman is up on Hagman Report, so check that out.
Rumor has it John Robertson is going to be in studio tomorrow.
Well, he better because I'm taking off.
Good. Okay.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah, hopefully John will be with us, and we'll have another rock and roll show like we did tonight. Until tomorrow,
Josh Kaplan. By the way, thank you, sir, Josh Kaplan.
Until tomorrow, stay safe. Have a great night.